We're back with our 792nd Panoramic Outdoors podcast. Welcome, everyone.
Was that minutes or seconds?
That's episodes, Sheldon.
Holy shit.
750 episodes in isolation.
So we've done that many episodes, but we're only airing like the 47th, so obviously we got a lot of shit episodes.
We're very selective.
Very selective what we do. What have you guys been up to, man? Like, I'm so bored over here in Brandon.
I went for a drive today. I fixed my truck yesterday, and it's like ice fishing season is quickly coming to a halt, so... But I didn't want to... Well, I didn't want to go ice fishing, so I drove around looking for some open water and found a little bit at the floodway, but... I was using some pretty light tackle, and it's the temperature is still below zero, so I was like good for like one cast, and then the line would ice up, and then I'd have to like strip all the line out, clean all the ice off, and then reel it back in, and then cast again to like get a good cast in. I never caught anything. There were a few fish rising, but it was just good to get out today.
What kind of fish?
I don't even know what was rising. Probably was sucker or something, or carp, or I don't know.
Oh.
Pickle rig, man. Pickle rig.
Yeah, should have went with pickle rig.
And Tristan, what have you been doing? You been cooking lots of food?
Yeah, I was cooking. I was doing a few odds and ends today. Like, the boredom level kind of hit a little in the sense of, like, I noticed that my cleaning rods for my rifles were sitting askew on the cleaning bench. So I made a bracket for them on the cleaning bench. That was the big project today. But the exciting part was I made that roast duck. And that was one of the ducks I'd harvested in the fall, a couple mallards. And before, when I thought duck tasted gamey, I was just telling Chase, was like, I'd go to the restaurant and get like the domestic duck, and I'd kind of like drool over how it was cooked. I was like, oh, you know, so much better almost than a wild harvested duck in some ways. Doesn't taste gamey. No, we were just treating our duck wrong this entire time. And so this one that I aged here, it, like, Chase was just not on the leg. It tastes like a chicken leg, he said. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
That's cool. And we talked about, if anyone's like wondering what aging ducks are, we talked about that in another podcast with Frank Baldwin.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of technique to it, and we kind of go through it there, but.
Yeah, that's exactly where I got all that information from, was listening to you guys on the Frank podcast, and that literally inspired me to start taking my duck care a little bit more seriously. Next mission is going to be to, like, I was hoping to harvest a nice goose this past fall, but I never got around to it, so that'll be the next mission, I think, is to age a goose and roast the whole goose kind of scenario.
Right. Yeah, that's sweet. I've been... Well, I'm still working, so that's good. And as actually earlier this week, I seen my first little flock of ducks. So I know spring's well on its way, and lots of Canada's around. But haven't seen any snows yet. But maybe they're on their way, or maybe I'm not in the right spots. Who knows? But
so you're scouting for them?
Well, I'm always scouting. I'm always looking.
You're always burning, right? Gas.
Burning gas. But yeah.
So, and this is our first real whack at a podcast here in the new world, eh?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, I think, going forward. And I think we're going to probably get better as the days go on. But, yeah, doing these remote podcasts, it's kind of tough, man. It's weird not just being around a table and just shooting the shit. That's for sure.
Certainly a lot more variables, too, to put into place for us to try and make everything sound as good as they do when we're all together. So it's a bit of a struggle factor there, but
yeah. And the thing is, like, on the side note of the podcast is, like, I found with myself in my own, like, personal life is that I'm like reconnecting with a bunch of people I haven't talked to or seen in a long time, and just because you're so bored or whatever, and people are FaceTiming you or Snapchatting you or doing whatever, and it's kind of a different time right now, but it's kind of fun at the same time when you can reconnect with people you haven't talked to in a long time, because every weekend's busy and people have kids and doing those activities, etc. But I don't know. It's kind of you take the positives with all the negatives that's going on, I guess.
That's a good way to put it there. Yeah, for sure, man.
And so we're lucky today. We got, I don't know, is celebrity the right word? I would think so, eh? Like a celebrity in the fishing world has joined
us. In the Canadian fishing world, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's running a better game than what these guys have been a part of. So, I think they're part of that whole kind of sweep that's taken over YouTube. And I was really excited at the prospect of just picking their brain, you know what I mean? Like, and trying to see what it's like behind the scenes a little, because we're coming at it from a media angle too. So there's all kinds of interesting stuff I was hoping to glean from the conversation today.
Yeah, and I think like getting into this episode and stuff is kind of, again, it seems like this like same old song and dance when we get people on. It's just like we really don't know how it's going to turn out, but then once we start talking and elaborating on thoughts and like how things were going, and I think it was a great episode, and I learned a lot just from tuning in. But yeah, listen, I thought it was a great episode.
You learn a lot from listening to me?
Man, the stuff I learned from you, I've been using like words like, what's that one word that you use all the time now?
Absolutely.
Sufficient, or no. I don't know. I don't even know how to say it. But I've tried using it, but I can't even pronounce it right. People just look at me like, what?
Maybe we should make that our next promo code. But
sure.
On promo codes, though, we just so folks know, we've got free shipping on orders over $100, and that's to get the gear out to you. And we want to see it out there, people wearing it, people throwing it up on their Instagram. We love that shit. Keep doing it. Tag us.
I didn't even realize it until our first order came through for that, but it's if you order a sweater and a hat, it works out to exactly $100. So free shipping.
And the other thing too is like, if you are thinking of ordering a hat, and you have other buddies that might want to order one too, like if you can get a couple hats or three or four hats in one order, you can save on shipping. So it's another avenue to do it.
Right. So you kind of batch order.
Right. The other thing too I got to mention is that I'm enjoying another TransCanada beer. And if you guys are ever looking to grab a case of beer from your LC or the vendor or whoever, try out TransCanada beers. I'm enjoying a Lamp Lighter right now, which is like it's an amber ale, and I really enjoy it. It's 5.2%, so it's not too heavy, it's not too light, it's kind of right in the middle. But if you have that chance, pick up a case of TransCanada beer, or if you're in Winnipeg, they do like curbside pickup and delivery. So check them out, TransCanada Beer on Instagram. Check out their website. Big thank you to them for helping us out on the podcast and media avenues.
Yeah, I stocked up with them before. Last week I stocked up with them there. I panicked when I heard the LCs might be closing and decided to buy as much of their beer as I could. And here we are.
Here we go.
So who's on today?
Chase.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on.
Chase is on. Perfect.
Chase has been a longtime partner of Panoramic Outdoors. And
so I'm excited. We got certainly one of our favorites from the 39-hour series. And one of the Conrad twins, Sean Conrad, will be joining us today.
Matt, don't tell Aaron and Jay. They probably don't listen to this podcast, so they probably won't hear it. But I was convinced the Conrads were going to win that 39-hour series. Spoilers. Maybe we should put that in the intro. Spoilers. But
yeah,
man, when they showed up in a flow plane in the first episode, I just thought for sure they got it wrapped.
Yeah.
These guys. And anyone that's listening to this intro right now, and if you haven't checked it on YouTube, it's 39 hours on YouTube. They got two seasons, and the Conrad brothers, there's a couple of different groups, so we're kind of talking with them, and yeah, check that out on YouTube. Basically, just look it up, 39 hours. You'll find it, and there's season one, season two. Check it out.
They've revolutionized the way that fishing shows are done. On not only is it not on your cable television, it's on YouTube for free.
Exactly.
But it is one of the most unique competition style fishing.
It's like platforms, yeah.
That you could do, I would say. And it's kind of interesting because I think it mirrors more what we do as average Joe fishermen and fisherwomen, will say, than maybe what like a tournament bass fisherman is doing, right?
I didn't think I was going to like it the first time I started watching it. And then by the end of it, I was like, I was so into it. It was crazy how it totally flipped on me.
Kind of like Tiger King.
Kind of like Tiger King.
Tristan, have you watched Tiger King?
Yeah, we've gone over this. I'm pretty sure this is the outro to our last podcast.
Well, I'm just making sure.
Yeah. I've seen it. But to not do Sean any further disservice here, buckle in, everyone, and we hope you enjoy the kind of like behind the curtain look here. We're hoping to offer at what it's like to be a world-class fisher person.
Sean Conrad, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the commute. I can't believe we lost out on a free fishing trip out in Diefenbaker because of this whole corona thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You guys gonna go or what?
Yeah, no, we were. I'm just joking there.
Yeah.
So how I'd like to start this out here, Sean, is I'm gonna ask you five burning questions. We do this with every guest. We're just trying to get maybe a little lighter side and just try to get to know you a little bit before we get into some of the other stuff we want to talk about.
Yeah.
But if you had one fish and one lure to catch that fish, what would it be for the rest of your life?
Well, it would probably be brown trout.
And brown, the big brown.
Yeah, it would. Brown trout is my favorite species to target. And it would probably be... I like using Rapalas, I guess. Just a black and white, shallow diver.
Nice.
Type of thing, yeah. I guess that's...
Right on.
In all different lakes and all around the world for brown trout to go like with a minnow pattern.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm going to branch off there for a second. And why? What's your affinity to brown trout compared to other fish?
Oh, they're just one of the toughest fish to catch and to target, I find.
So the challenge reward kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're one of the toughest trout to target and to catch, if you've ever trout fished.
Mm-hmm. We've done a bit of trout fishing. I haven't targeted browns in specific yet, but
yeah,
it's definitely on the list.
Yeah, we started out our fishing career pike and walleye, obviously, then branched off to sturgeon, and then we branched off to trout. So that's how kind of our career went.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Question number two. If you had one last concert to attend live... And it could be with anybody, if they're around or not, who would it be?
Oh, a concert? Whoa.
Just going into left field here.
Can it be a fishing thing? No. I like country, so I just went to a Luke Combs concert, and that would, I like country, so Luke Combs, I guess, or a country concert. I would love to go to Bassmasters and watch Dave Mercer.
That'd be a good one.
Stuff. Yeah, that would be sweet, watching that stuff live there too. But
Kate, question number three. It's a 39-hour question.
Yeah.
But obviously in both seasons you fish with your brother, but if you had to take another partner other than him, but one of the characters in the show, who would it be?
I guess it'd be Jay, because we had that question on the live chat after the season was done, and I picked Jay.
Nice.
I think because Jay and I are pretty close, like we're both chill, you know, go with the flow, you know, so we'd probably work well together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Question number four, you have one last meal before you take off from this earth. What would it be? And you can put some detail in it if you have to.
Well, steak and lobster.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Medium rare steak and just whole cooked lobster, I guess.
Right on.
Have you ever eaten a brown trout?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, out in Alberta here, in some of the lakes, you catch some smaller ones, and they actually taste really good. Most of the time, brown trout don't taste good because they're usually white meat. But if you could find a lake where they're stocked and they're like a put and take fishery, they taste pretty good so far, most of the time. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
And my last question: if you had to spend 39 hours in a boat with anyone in the world, either living or not here, who would it be?
Well, my girlfriend, I guess. Get some brownie points.
Nice.
Or my brother.
So. Right on. But I guess that's the wrap up to our five burning questions. But I guess we'll start off the conversation is basically how we'll get it going is, like we were saying earlier, kind of in the little brief introduction, is that Fishing Geeks is what a lot of people know you guys as. Yeah. Do you want to run through how that all started with you and your brother and having the presence on social media and YouTube, etc.? How did that all start, and even like how did you get started fishing?
Well, we always went with my dad when we were younger, and we did camping trips and go way up north for pike and walleye, like way to the end of the road up north. And that's how we got started. And then Adam and I just branched off on tour by ourselves. And then, you know, we would take our bikes out fishing. And, Fishing Geek's name came. We were 2004, we started hearing of the record trout being caught at Diefenbaker. Now, we had never caught a trout over 6 pounds. And then we were told where they were catching them, and in 2005 we caught our first rainbow trout in that spot, and it was 15 pounds, and then we just started fishing hard, and our first line class world record was a 33 pound rainbow trout. We had broken the provincial record 3 times in 3 weeks. We kept breaking the record, 20 with a 28, a 30, and a 33 pounder. And we were just fishing all the time, and then we went for a world. We were telling people we were going to catch a world record, like the ball tackle. And a lot of people were talking about us on the news after we broke the provincial record and got the line class world record. And then we wanted to start a website. And we were thinking about Fishing Freaks, but I think that name was taken, and we just were like, well, there's people that are computer geeks that are always on the computer while we're always fishing, so we got to be called the Fishing Geeks. So
nice.
That's kind of how that came. So we started our website up, I think, in 2006 or 7. So.
Yeah. So let me get this straight. Your first rainbow trout was 18 pounds.
The first one in the spot we caught the world record was, it was 15 pounds, the very first one.
So the first one in Diefenbaker.
Well, yeah. We've caught trout in Diefenbaker, but Diefenbaker is a huge area.
Right.
So, but yeah, the first one we caught was 15 pounds, yeah.
That's wild. That'd be one way to, like, get hooked on trout fishing for sure. If I caught a 15-pound trout, kind of in my first.
and you're at your first spot in the first place.
Wow. Yeah.
honestly, that was a small one. After we started catching more, we would average, like, the average size was into that 17 to 18 pound range.
No way.
Yeah, a lot of our clients, they'd catch like a 20-pounder, and they're freaking out, and we're like, guys, no, this is a nice fish, but wait till you see a true 30-pounder. The 30-pounders were hard to get. You get one in 3 days back in the day with our clients, you know, a real 30-pound trout. So.
I remember when I first came across your social media and, like, seen the Fishing Geeks handle, and it was a rainbow, and the thing looked like a freak of nature. It was so fat, and it had no neck, and was all shoulders, and I'd never seen a trout like that in my life, and I thought for sure it was some sort of exotic stocked trout farm, like they're growing white-tailed bucks down south, but no, it's just this lake.
Noel, it's funny how people, they think a lot of these fish are trout farm hatchery fish, and yeah, most of them are, but they only get to 6 pounds in the trout nets. At 6 pounds, they take them away and you know, sell them to the stores. So even if a trout was 6 pounds, it would have to grow another 42 pounds after the fact in the lake. So.
Yeah, watching the two of you fish, it's quite clear that it's that fishery that's producing those specimens.
They have unlimited ciscos is what's in the lake. So just imagine having unlimited ciscos to eat. It's just like you don't stop eating. Like rainbow trout, they'll eat until they can't eat anymore. You know.
That's interesting because you guys were just on Lake Winnipeg here after the 39 hours showing the final viewing there, doing a little fishing, and I unfortunately didn't catch the major boom, I think, on the lake that occurred.
Everyone said we were a month late.
Yeah, but even a few years back, I would say about 3 or 4 years back, our Cisco population on Lake Winnipeg was doing really well, and as a consequence, the walleye, that's when we really had, we were starting to, I think that's when the Lake Winnipeg got put on the map, really.
Yeah.
For fishing. So it was kind of cool to see you guys tooling around on the lake where we fish all the time, for sure. And a lot of Manitoba fisher people. But it makes total sense that a Cisco population could drive fish numbers like that, because we saw it on the lake here. And if you're telling us that's what's happened on Diefa Baker, then I'm going to believe you on that one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of lakes have ciscos in them, but it's just a matter of how deep the lake is and how much, what size the ciscos are and how much of a population there is of them and where they are in the lake, you know, for the fish to get at them, right?
So you guys caught a lot of, like, big fish. How many world records do you guys hold right now currently?
A lot of people have been asking lately that. We got the two all tackles. I have the Burbot and the Rainbow.
Right.
And then there's there's also line class world records, like the heaviest. So Adam and I were trying to break every line class world record back in the day. I think we have all but three of the line class world records for Rainbow. So I think we have in total between line class world records and all tackle, I think there's 11 or 12 of them.
So when you're talking about line class and all tackle, what are the difference between those two categories? Or what are you talking about?
The all tackle is a fish caught on any kind of line, any size, doesn't matter, any rod and reel. The line class is if you're fishing with 10-pound monofilament and you catch a 30-pound trout on that. You could look on the website, if you're a member, and see what the line class, the heaviest caught on that line is. So then at that moment, you have to send your line in to get break tested. So you send them about 20 feet of line, and then they do 3 break tests on that line to see how heavy your line actually is. And
interesting.
If you went to the store and bought 10-pound monofilament and broke test it right away, it's going to break test at about a 14 or 15-pound break test, so it's going to be heavier than what you wanted, right?
Right. So I imagine that the braid is not a popular popular item to try and use break that. Line class.
Yeah, we've had probably 7 or 8 line class world records denied because of our line or our weigh scale or other things. So it took us a while to like figure out exactly what line to use. And IGFA recognizes P line as actually the one of the only lines that break tests at what it says. So if you want to target a world record and you want a line class, you go by P line, it's called. And then if you buy a 6-pound line, that's what a break test's at. So.
Oh, that's pretty crazy.
That's the brand? It's P-Line.
Yeah, it's called P-Line. A lot of our clients actually used... some of our clients used it, and they were trying to break line class world records with us. And we got, I think, one member in a line class world record, one that failed. So one was a 40-pound rainbow trout he caught.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 40-pound, 2-ounce or something. And that's... I think that still holds up still to this day. So,
and so right on. How long have you been guiding for then?
Well, we just part time guide. 2008 we started guiding, and 2008 and 2009 we guided hard. Every weekend we would take the weekend off and guide. 2010 it was a tough year. That's when a lot of the trout died off, and then 2012 they came back. So, but we've been guiding ever since, you know, just part time. But now my brother right now is trying to branch off into full time guiding, and then if that takes off, you know, eventually I'll be able to also. So,
I noticed after 39 hours again seemed to be a positive experience for everyone involved, and then. Fishing Geeks have been on top of content here as a, you know, as a one outdoors company to the other. It seems like Fishing Geeks is pumping out content almost weekly here, which is exciting.
In videos?
Yeah, videos. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, we try and videotape a lot of our trips. You know, a lot of trips don't pan out because sometimes we don't even catch fish. And then maybe some people want to see that, but, you know, Adam and I want to videotape as much as we can, just to get the content out there, to, you know, just to help people fish and to show people, like, if a lot of people want us to fish. But also we just like to go out and fish too sometimes, right? So we do as much as we can videotaping and then put some content out there at least. So
that's definitely a relatable kind of dynamic for us too. Even it's just hard to generate content at the same time and sometimes enjoy yourself if you want to just go out and fish and relax.
After 39 hours, you know, we did some filming and stuff, but then also it's like I did a couple trips where I just didn't even want to pick up my phone. I just wanted to get out there and enjoy fishing, right? So, and we do that often too. So
yeah, and that being said there too, I think a lot of people watch it that kind of follow us as well, 39 hours. But do you want to kind of like dive into the grind? It was like, there's one thing that I would maybe point out in the series is like, I don't think people realize like how much work and how much traveling and how many hours you guys put in. It's not 39 hours straight, but yeah. Do you want to just kind of like break that down for everyone?
Like our strategy into going into season 2 was to target big fish. Fish that other teams wouldn't have much of a chance of beating, just so we could, you know, get those points we needed. So we did the fly-in trip, and we planned that. That was the plan for like 2 years. We were planning that, and we were actually a little bit afraid going into the lake because we had no idea about anything of the lake. So we were scared, like, okay, are we actually going to catch a 20-pounder, you know? But we just stuck to the techniques that we know catch big fish for lake trout that we use around here. And, you know, eventually, you know, we got into the fish. It's stressful. It's stressful because we want to catch fish, put out good content. But if we're not catching fish and we're not putting out content, you know, most of this is for the viewers to watch. So after episode 2, where we were trying to catch a sturgeon and we blanked, you know, we were we were kind of stressed at the end. We were going to do another session at Nipawin for sturgeon, but we were going to sleep there and relax. But instead, we had to pack everything up, drive. It was 3.5 hours to Adam's house, switch boats, and then drive another 2 hours to another spot. And then by then, we had no sleep. You know, so it's stressful. Competing, right? It's like a competition, and if you're not on your game, you know, you can get swept away, and Adam and I just wanted to do our best. So, and in order to do that in Manitoba or Saskatchewan, you have to travel, right? Lots of traveling just to get at different lakes that have different species. So, you know, we enjoyed it, and then it also was stressful at points. It's like, I think at the end, after we caught the brown trout, we were fishing for burbot there and trying for some. We were saying, we're like, man, season one would have been over by now. We got to still do another day.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh.
So you guys have, like, what were your sessions set up at? Like, were you allowed so much time per day? Like, how did that work out exactly?
6.5 hour sessions. And six sessions of that was 39 hours total, right? So we were allowed half hour before sunrise, and then we were allowed to fish half hour after sunrise. So whatever time frame that lined up for 6.5 hours of that, right, on each session. And the thing was, in Free Lake, the sun rose at 2:45.
Oh, God.
Nobody knows that. We had to wake up at 1:30 in the morning.
Oh my
and
goodness.
Get to our spot. Our lake truck spot was a half hour drive.
Oh man.
Wow.
And I was watching a video there with Taro and you, and was mentioning that a lot of the other prep work we didn't see was that you and Adam had all your rods rigged and everything basically leading into the competition. So there was just a tremendous amount of prep work even leading into the competition, not even the competition itself.
Well, we had three boats ready, and in each boat we had rods in each boat rigged ready, and all our tackle, and all we had to transport was pretty much food, our clothes, and the measuring board, and everything else was ready to go. And it took about 2 days of just, you know, slowly getting everything ready to organize all our hooks for every species and each tackle box and every rod and every size line, and then each place we were going to go. So we had to have everything, you know, figured out. And then, you know, it all seemed to work out at the end.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, like, I kind of always wondered about, like, you guys obviously go into this, little competition and stuff, like, with a game plan, but, like, how much of that game plan did you actually follow, or was there a lot of, like, just, you know what I mean, like, just off your seat,
direction and go? We followed three sessions, so half of it was followed, and then the other half we had to switch and figure out different scenarios, because then we were going to do two sessions at Nipawin where we only did one. So then we had to figure out where we were going to go for other species for another session. And then a lot of people don't know, but we were going to jump to Alberta for the last day and do an 8-hour drive out to Alberta. But I think that would have just killed us to drive, right? And it actually worked out better that we stayed, because we were actually able to gain points back at the end too, right?
That would have been a tough haul for the last session for sure.
Yeah, it was a 7.5 hour drive from spot to spot, and we would have been late the last day. So we had guaranteed points in Alberta. It's just, you know, we just made the decision at the end, and our camera guy was tired, and we were tired, and we're like, I don't even think we have the capability of driving that far and making it without stopping and having a nap.
Yeah, no kidding. What do you think your, like, the most important tactic that you guys employed was, or the like, you were talking earlier about being out at the sunrise for fishing for lake trout. Would it be something like that, or is there something else that you guys figure might be the most important thing to do in a,
Well, obviously, yeah, we wanted to, you know, lake trout are a morning feeder, so we wanted to get that over first, right? And then pike are more of an afternoon feeder. So we planned a lot of our species as per the time frame. And I think we did well. We could have done a lot better, but, you know, a lot of people are like, why didn't you go for bass in Saskatchewan? It's like, okay, well, we could have went for largemouth bass down south, but it was a 5-hour drive. And what other species do we have there that we would have been able to contend with, right? So I think we choose well. So
some of that geography management, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just a matter of, like, if they do season 3, Adam and I are going to have to change our game plan, obviously, and figure out, you know, how we can beat these other teams. And I think, you know, we've started, and if it happens, you know, we'll be ready, and we'll be prepping and doing everything we can. But, you know, the fish just have to show up too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spent an entire week in the Duck Mountains here in Manitoba. I don't know if you've ever fished there, but...
yeah, I've heard of them.
Basically not caught a fish all week, so I could see how 39 hours could slip away from a guy pretty quickly.
Yeah.
When I saw you boys up north, though, in a float plane to start episode 1, I started howling, and I thought, oh, man, every other team's going to be in for it here because they're going to be putting up some big fish mighty quick. But you
know, we had grayling. We had grayling up there.
Yeah. But
the thing was, the grayling were in a river, in a major river system, and that was like a 2-hour boat ride from our camp.
Oh, no one targeted grayling in the episode, or the whole show. I was actually really surprised.
Yeah, but we did in the pre-fishing. We tried for grayling, and all we caught were lake trout with little spinners. And we talked to the camp people there, and they're like, yeah, we catch grayling while we catch lake trout. I'm like, well, but then, like, if you want to get a guaranteed grayling, you got to go to the river, which was 2 hours away on boat.
Right.
And it didn't show the episode 1. When we caught that first lake trout, there was 50 to 60 click winds howling, and we could barely, like, get across the lake to the pike spot.
So, oh, man.
And yeah, then you land up getting flooded out of Nipawin, too. Is that...
Yeah, Nipawin, we fished it 3 days beforehand, and we did amazing. And then when we were filming, the floodgates were opened up. So there was, like, triple the water flow that we were fishing the 3 days before. So... you know, we should have probably found a different spot to fish instead of the spot that we had pre-fished that did really well.
Do you have any tactics for something like that? Because there's a couple locations here in Manitoba that obviously are controlled by Manitoba Hydro, and some days they're super hot, and other days they're just ice cold when the water starts flowing a little bit more.
Yeah, usually if there's really, really low, like slow water, that's not good either because the fish are used to more current. So if it's really slow or zero current in the river system that should have current, it's not going to be as good. And if there's normal flow, then, you know, you just fish your normal spots. But if there's high flow, then you got to find more of a back eddy spot or something to fish, like a shallower spot off the current.
Right.
Current break or something, you know, and that's something we didn't do. And then we ended up just fishing for sauger and walleye. So, but, yeah, I don't know, for sturgeon in a river system. Yeah. You just want to get your boat into more of a current break, I guess, or something. But,
nice.
And it's fish. Adam and I, we don't use all the fancy electronics. We just find spots, try and fish, you know, we use our depth finder. We don't have those, you know, Garmin Panoptix stuff, right? So
that's one thing that I really enjoyed watching too about you guys and some of the remote lakes that you guys were hammering into, and just grab a tinner boat and toss a electric motor on it and let's go catch some fish kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like that's what we're used to. So you can't bring a whole bunch of stuff into these lakes. You got to carry in your boat, you know, so you just go with what you know, that species, you know, brook trout, more of a shallow fishing, just fish the drop-offs and stuff, so, you know.
It's often overwhelming at times to, like, watch a fishing show, or, like, we do a lot of hunting, too, so, like, a hunting show where I mean, these guys, lots of the guys are getting like the latest and greatest gear, and you got to use this to do this, you got to use that to do that, and it's like, no, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air watching you guys fish in the backcountry. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
When we first started fishing, like, we didn't have any expensive stuff. We had like the old good old ugly sticks, you know. Like, some of the first rainbow we were catching on were the ugly sticks. in 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
Then everyone's like, oh, you guys got to get better stuff. And it's like, well, can you afford it? Maybe, you know, it's what you can afford.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Want to get out fishing.
I did have a few questions about your gear, because I did a bit of a fishing geeks binge today before we rolled on here. And there's a couple recurring items that I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Obviously, the team name was Dakota Lithium, and I saw you guys tug that around a few places. Like, how is it using that battery pack, and like, what are some of those versatile features that
you seem to be? So batteries, they charge 3 to 4 times faster than the normal batteries, and they're 3 times lighter. So it's because they're so light and they're carrying batteries into these lakes. And they have, I think it's 2 to 3 times longer life on them too. So for like cranking amps and stuff. So it's just a better battery all around.
So
then you got to pay for that too, right?
Yeah. So better battery all around, but it seems like you can charge your phone on it too. Like
they make those, hey, so you could like take a normal battery and then
add
the connections in the box and then put a USB on there. So that was all handmade by them, you know. So then, yeah, they had USB ports on those boxes, cigarette lighter that you could use for your charging your phone also, and they had lights on there. So it was pretty neat. We could keep that little battery pack around. It's easy to carry on, and it would charge your phones and stuff for most of the trips, so.
Nice. Might have to look into that.
Yeah.
And then I noticed on the ice videos, you guys make quite a bit of use of the jaw jackers, or at least you put them out frequently. And you got the little mats that are covering the holes. And then I think I saw at one point that I was watching a pike video, and I thought it was hilarious. You had caught a pike, and then your bacon was about to burn.
Oh yeah.
So you put it back in the jaw jacker, and then you went, turned off the stove, and then picked up the pike again and reeled it in.
We always bring bacon on our trips. That was Adam. Once he realized it was a pike, even if it was a big pike, and he knew he had trout line, he wasn't too concerned about. Like, we're not crazy pike fish. We don't love fishing for pike. It's fun, but it's not a thing. So he's like, oh, I'm just gonna put this down. I don't want my bacon to burn. So he ran over, shut his bacon off. He was with his son. His son's not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So he put his rod back in the rod holder, loosened the drag, like to let the fish do a couple runs, and then he made sure the bacon didn't burn. But we, like, I know I watch, you know, everyone watches Uncut Angling and Jay and them, and I don't think Aaron uses jaw jackers ever. It's just a preference he doesn't. But Adam and I, you know, when we do these northern trout trips, we like to space our stuff out. So we'll put one rod 20 yards away, and then there'll be me in a tent, and then Adam will put another rod, jaw jacker, 20 yards away from me, and then 20 yards away from him. So we'll space out a whole area of our rods, and then the jaw jackers, you're not moving around your jaw jackers. You're not spooking any fish around there. So they work really well. Seem to catch a lot of fish. So
better for trails.
Yeah, those mats we make, the hole insulators, like, because we fish in minus 30, so you put a hole insulator in there, and so your line doesn't freeze, so the jaw jackets can actually work, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we like using those quite a bit.
And then tackle wise, I notice you use a little bit of a Manitoba company once in a while, the TC Moto baits.
Oh, yeah. Terry is his name. He works out of Calgary, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. He started out, he was building his tubes, and he started sending me tubes a long time ago. must have been like 4 years ago, and I did a bull trout video with them. And ever since, like, he had them on sale and stuff, but I did this bull trout video in Kananaskis in Calgary, and then the next week he said he couldn't, the tubes were all gone. Depending on this. Right?
Yeah.
So Terry's a good guy. He sends me pretty much all his prototypes to try out and test. So, you know, they work great for lake trout, bull trout, burbot. Even I've caught a big walleye on them too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So he helps us out, and then we test his products and let him know what we think.
Nice. So for all the listeners out there, and even for us, I'll say this is a good question, especially since, like, you guys really seem to a lot of times just go with whatever you need. What do you think are, like, three of the most important things that are going to help you make a difference when you're out fishing?
Just in general?
I guess give me... You know what? Let's do two for, like, open water and two for ice fishing. How about that?
Well, so open water, I feel like, depending on the fish, in general, you basically want to be fishing at sunrise. You know, sunrise and sunset. You have to... A lot of people, they show up late, and then they wonder why they don't catch any fish, right? You have to be fishing prime times, I guess we call them. So if you're fishing prime time, especially in the summer, you'll catch fish. And also finesse fishing, we call it. Like, we downsize. Like, if a lot of people are using 15-pound braid or 15-pound, 12-pound mono for, let's say, walleye, Adam and I will go down to 6 to 8-pound test. You know, we'll just use a straight up tiny little treble hook onto a minnow on our jaw jacker, just with no weight, and then slowly get the minnow down right off bottom, just so there's nothing on the line. It's just finesse fishing, you know, prime time, you're going to catch fish. And I guess, I don't know, you guess you could say this for summer and winter too, right?
Yeah.
And then just, you know, be patient and be quiet. So many things, like, Adam and I try and just to be very technical, and we think a lot about it. So just be like, it'd be like deer hunting. How are you going to stalk a deer?
Right. Yeah, that's a good
idea. Be there at sunrise. Be quiet. Don't have all your stuff, like, just have everything ready, right? And then just be patient, and it'll happen. So.
Nice.
Yeah. That's how we target a lot of our brown trout out here in Alberta. I just think of it, how would I get a deer? Like, the brown trout are they spook a lot, hey? So you got to be very quiet, right? So.
That's a good way to think about things. I can't say I've put that into thought before.
Yeah, and plus Adam and I are twins, so we basically talk about fishing all the time and how we could do better. Every species and every scenario, basically, we all always talk about different things. So,
different things. So my question would be: you guys are twins. You guys spend a lot of time together in the boat. Is, like, not talking to each other to be quiet in the boat is, like, essential for you guys not, like, freaking out at each other? Because I know if I, like, went fishing with my siblings, my sister, or whoever, yeah. I, like, after a few hours, I'd probably be like, "Okay, that's it. Like, I'm done fishing with you."
Oh no, Adam and I. You know, we could fish if we're not on camera in 39 hours. You know, that got stressful. You know, after three days, we fought a bit. It showed at the end, but it showed a little bit of our fighting, not the whole thing.
Right.
But no, we do really well together, and we basically try and plan one trip every 2 months that we meet up, and we just fish together the whole weekend. Right.
Right.
Yeah. We could do that, and we basically just do it to get away and to relax and to fish, right? So, yeah, we don't really fight ever on the boat. Only in 39 hours.
How many?
Each season we fought once.
How many energy drinks were consumed in season two between you two?
We don't. A lot of people think we drink a lot of energy drinks. We basically don't drink energy drinks during, like, Monday to Friday. It's usually just, like, fishing. We'll we'll have one a day, maybe. I think we probably had three each during 39 hours.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, we try not to drink more than one or two, especially two a day gets you really wired. So. And the last day we basically didn't have any because we thought our bodies were going to shut down because we were so, so done.
We've kind of hinted at the brown trout here, but like watching that on the screen, and I know Jay is a bit of a maestro when it comes to editing, but like walk us through that because that seemed like one of the most, I've never seen so many big fish caught in one fishing show, but to see that trout come out of the water on that show within that time frame was, it seemed almost like mystical.
Well, the thing is, and the reason why we get so excited, and, well, obviously the fish came out of the water, we see how big it was, but we spend 3 days sometimes fishing for those big brown trout at Diefenbaker, and you might get one. You have 3 days of fishing. So to be on camera and to fish for them for 5 minutes and to hook up with one, you know, I was calm because we like to be calm while we fight the fish until we actually like know what it is, because some of the times it's just big white fish and you don't even, it's not even a trout. So well, I thought it was maybe a white fish at the start and then we're fighting it. And the first, the jump you guys seen was nothing. The first jump it did came 3 feet out of the water.
Ooh.
Like straight up like a rocket and right in front of us. And that, and then we, it looked like a 30 plus pounder. Like it's so big. So
did your heart hit your throat there or what happened?
Yeah, I just kind of, you don't really remember a lot of it. You know, I basically just go into my brown trout mode when I hook a monster and basically just panic and try not to have the hook spit.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
So basically you're stressed out while you're fighting this fish. You're worried you're going to lose it. And it's like, and then you're in the middle of the fight. You're like, why do I do this to myself? It's so stressful.
It's funny that you said that you could be there all day. 3 days even and only get a chance at one. Again, and that's just another like kind of parallel to big game hunting in a lot of ways, eh? Where you're just kind of hanging your hat on, you know, the deer is going to walk down this trail eventually, but you got to be in the right spot at the right time still.
And a lot of people, like, they contradict themselves if they haven't actually caught a big trout at a spot. So they're going to do their techniques, and if they don't catch one, they're like, well, this isn't even the way to catch them, or they're not even here. But it's like, Adam and I have caught them, so we know, so we just keep doing what we know that works, right? And we have the confidence that it eventually will work, right? So a lot of people don't realize that you just have to keep at it and not get down, you know, can't get frustrated, right? You just got to keep lifting.
I think you just pointed out the flaw in my deer hunting technique as well there. So thanks for that, Sean.
Yeah. Sometimes you get lucky. Like I went to a lake in Alberta and it's supposed to have a 20-pound brown trout. And I fished it for 2 days. And the last day I was right before I was going to leave, I hooked one. And I fought it for like 15 minutes and it came out of the water. It was probably a 15-pound brown trout. And then it spit the hook.
Oof.
So it's like, yeah, I'm frustrated. But I know they're there, and I know that I'm capable. So I did 6 trips after that and never caught one.
No way.
Until the year later, I got, and then finally I got 3 in 1 day. So it's just a matter of being patient, waiting, right?
Okay, I got a question for you. If you could go to a lake and say you're spending a day there, would you rather catch a fish, like, right out of the gate and not catch any for the rest of the day, or would you rather catch one right at the end of the day?
Oh, man. I would probably want to catch it right away. But, yeah.
That's a terrible question.
I don't like fishing lakes that only have small fish. If a lake winter kills or something, I don't like going to that lake. If it has potential and I'm not catching, I'll still spend the time there I'll spend the time to catch one. So.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I don't even catch one, it makes me want to catch it even more. Yeah.
So Diefenbaker is this massive, massive lake that obviously doesn't winter kill very often.
No, it's like deep.
Yeah. And then I saw you and Adam are hitting up Cold Lake quite a bit too. Is that another large water body as well?
Yeah. It's just a, it's a lake that's in between us, so we can meet there, and it's got lake trout.
It seems like a pretty sweet spot.
Yeah, the thing that Alberta government's doing wrong with that is they're letting people keep only one fish, but that one fish has to be over 29 and a half inches.
Oh.
So basically every fish that's over 29 and a half inches that gets killed.
Yeah.
So there's not many fish over 34, 35 inches in that lake. Like, I think the biggest, I was talking to a DNR, he said in the last 5 years, the biggest he's ever seen is 39 inches. So,
wow. So
it's just a fun lake to go to, and there's a chance at a 15 to 20 pounder. So
they're fat fish there, though. Like, they're like, I mean, compared to what I'm catching in Clearwater here, those things look pretty chunky.
Yeah, they are, but you know, sometimes a lot of them have, you know, we catch them in about 80 feet of water, so their air bladder is a little bit bigger too. But they, on average, they are pretty fat fish, you know, compared to certain other trout lakes. It's a numbers lake. Like, you'll go and catch 50 fish a day if you're on them, but you know, one of them might be over 30 inches. So you just gotta wait for the big ones. I got lucky this year. We got three over 34 inches. So, and that's outstanding, actually. So.
And I guess that kind of plays into your guiding model here. I was noticing it. You were saying that you and Adam can, as guides, can choose to focus on either numbers fishing, so catching lots of fish quantity wise within the day, or pursuing quality or really big fish. Like, how does that kind of differ?
Well, it depends. If Adam and I want to, if we're like, we eat fish too, so if we want to get some white meat, we'll just go to a lake that has nice walleye and catch or eat or walleye and just have a fun trip, right? But most of the time, we'll do like stocked trout lakes, and then we'll do our research on, you know, sizes of fish and what's in the lake and what years they were stocked and how many they were stocked at certain years. And that goes in, that's a big factor into how that lake's going to fish. So if they stock 15,000 fish in 2016, and then in 2018, they only stocked 5,000. You know, you're just good. You know, we go by that to see how many and what years they were stocked and how big they'll be, right?
Yeah, it'll be kind of a declining fishery. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, with that too, when you go with those years, what are you looking for? Like, how much would a trout grow from 2016 to 2018?
You want to be fishing a lake that 3 to 4 years ago they stocked a lot. And 3 to 4, like a 4 year stocked rainbow trout's gonna be in that 26 inch to 27 inch range. So they grow quick, right? But they only have 7 year lifespan, so they're almost 1.5 years or 1 year old when they stock them as fingerlings, right?
Right.
So by the time this 4 years later, they're already 5 year old fish, they're almost about to die, right? So they got maybe 1 or 2 years left. So you want to fish it about 3 to 4 years on a good stocking year, like 3 to 4 years after.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Some of the lakes in Alberta or Manitoba, they might just do regular stocking every year of that many. But in Saskatchewan, it varies quite a bit, actually. And sometimes they only do every second year.
So you've done all this research on lakes, you've and the stocking models, you pre-tied all your lines leading into the 39-hour segment, and got a plane booked up. Does that kind of bleed over into kind of the guiding career that you and Adam are starting to build here? Is that kind of the same approach you're taking to guiding?
We got two different sections. We have a trophy section if you want to book with us, and that's when we're going to be very technical. We're going to tell you how it's at. You might only get one bite a day, but it's going to be a giant, right? And then we also have the general section where you go catch a lot of fish and, you know, keep your limit if you want, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, we're very particular in being cleanly in the boat, having everything packed away, because when chaos happens, you don't want clutter, right? So we're very, we like to be tidy on our boats too and organized.
I guess that's the last thing you need when you got a trophy fish on the line is somebody's foot or somebody's rod sitting in the net.
Yeah. Like when we're guiding, our clients bring two rods, one to cast with and one to bait fish with. And some of our clients, they'll just put their bait fishing rod down and start casting. And we're like, okay, let's put that bait rod away properly before you start casting. And they're like, okay. And sometimes they get annoyed with us, but then when you hook a fish, a monster, and all chaos breaks loose, they're like, at the end, they're like, okay, I see why you're very particular, why you want a cleanly boat, because that was insane.
Yeah. So, and trout are not controlled fish.
When you get a 20 to 30 pound rainbow in the net, you know, you want the boat clean and ready to go to bring that fish in and take pictures quick and have everything done, right?
Yeah.
So
even when they're rocketing out of the water, 100 feet away from 37
you. 37 inch brown trout.
And you're screaming, "Big brown."
Yeah, a lot of that screaming I didn't even remember, and then at the end I was like, man, my voice is almost gone. What happened there?
I was going to set that as my ringtone, man. That was awesome watching that fish come in. Yeah. How much bacon do you guys go through a weekend?
We usually just bring one pack a day per trip or whatever.
Okay.
We like our bacon, but now it's almost like a joke that we have to have bacon in the video because it's going to bring us good luck. Whereas if you bring bananas on the boat or something, you're not going to catch a fish.
You guys are cooking bacon in the boat too?
Oh yeah, we cook bacon in the boat.
Oh man.
I got one more question for you there. And you've been in the first season of 39 Hours, now the second season of 39 Hours. It's kind of a two-part, I guess. The first part of it is like, how did the first season differ from the second season? And if there is a third season, what are you going to do different? Which I think we've already talked about a little bit, but you can just kind of elaborate that way.
The first season was, we basically just wanted to catch species. Because we weren't sure how it was going to be, and we just wanted to put lots of species on the board. And to, you know, like we had no idea that this thing, 39 Hours, was going to be, you know, as well as it did. So we just wanted to beat Aaron.
That's awesome.
Season two, you know, with another team added, we were like, okay, well, now we got to really figure out where these big fish are, like lake trout. So that's why we went to Key Lake and we fish Nipawin. And a lot of people are like, why didn't you fish Nipawin in the first season? Because Nipawin's a huge walleye spot, right? But it just wasn't in the game plan. So we, you know, in season two, we wanted to target bigger fish that would the points would stay, right? As in season one, we just wanted to catch lots of species and put species on the board. Season three, if that happens, we're going to go with a different game plan. I think Adam and I were talking about it, but still, we're going to be targeting, obviously, the big fish and the species. But if it happens, I don't want to spill too much of the beans of how we're going to prep it, because then Jay and Aaron will have a little advantage there.
I guess I'm going to add on to that question too, but if there is a season three, and you talked about going to Alberta, I kind of had this like understanding that you'd be kind of sticking to Saskatchewan, but like, could you like flop into Manitoba and just steal some fish from Aaron? And
well, we could fish anywhere we wanted to, and in season two we were allowed to.
Okay, cool.
But then it's like, how much fishing has Adam and I done in Manitoba?
Sure.
You know? So we'd have to take time off work and then go over there and pre-fish. Now, you go over there and pre-fish it, is this place going to be the same in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or in a month, right? Because as the season goes on, you know, just like walleye, walleye in the spring don't fish like walleye in the summer, right?
Right.
So we're going to basically stick to the stuff we know and can do well with.
So here's my question then. What did Aaron and Jay do right? Are you comfortable saying that, or did they just get lucky?
Well, yeah, they had a game plan just like we did. They were 100% prepared for this, right? And they knew where each species was and how big they were in each spot and were capable of getting, right? So you could see them as they go into their episodes. They're going for a burbot. Well, they know exactly where the hole is. They know how deep it is. They pre-fished it, and they know what they're doing, right? So they obviously did that right. And, you know.
Clearly a little bit of luck, though, with the rock bass playing out the way it did there.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting to watch everyone fight for points at the end, obviously.
Yeah, it was. You know, some of the species you guys got in Manitoba, we don't have a lot of those, so we just have to make sure that we beat Aaron and Jay in the species that we had, right? So they got that huge brookie, like that a 19-inch brookie is massive, right? That's a huge fish. It's almost comparable to our brown trout for a Manitoba brook trout. So. That's one species that really crushed us when they caught it. We're like, wow, that's a huge brook trout.
It'd be hard to bounce back from that, clearly.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you have done much brook trout fishing, but if you hit a 20-inch brook trout in your life, you're doing well.
Yeah. I've had the opportunity to do some fishing, brook trout fishing on the up towards the coast of Hudson Bay.
Yeah.
And it's not unusual to climb into some like 23 to 25 inch brookies up there.
Yeah, so that's a trophy class fishery with probably a flowing water scenario.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, on rivers. Yeah.
But you get a stocked lake brook trout over 20 inches is a tough go usually.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting how that dynamic changes there from the river to the lake. Yeah.
You just think about it. It's got more oxygen in a lake or in a river. It's going to be colder. A trout are a cold water species.
Yeah.
And they love oxygen. So if you put those two together and then you put some bait in there, their lifespan's going to expand another 2 or 3 years for sure.
So in digging here, and I have to be straight up with you, Sean. I was digging deep and I watched the, I think it was the all tackle video for the rainbow.
Yeah.
And not only is that a chunky fish, but I saw a couple pictures in there that might have hinted at a modeling career. Am I off here, or am I?
long time ago, Adam and I did a couple modeling pictures when we were 20 or 21 or something.
So
is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. So.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Is there a website for that that we can?
No, actually, that's the only picture we got now. Everything's probably on computers that have been thrown away. And that's crazy because a lot of our guiding pictures, we had hundreds and hundreds of these 20 to 30 pound rainbow trout pictures, and a lot of them we can't even find anymore. I think they're on CDs put away somewhere or something.
Oh yeah. I had my computer go down on me, and it was that I had my heart hit my throat there for sure because I realized all my pictures were not backed up.
Yeah, and, like the fishery in Diefenbaker was so good back in the day, you wouldn't even take a picture of a 20-pound rainbow usually. Wow. That's how good it was. We had a night. We took three guys out. We caught 19 rainbow over 20 pounds.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so it's like 20 pounder. Just let them go. There's a 30 on the line here.
I honestly couldn't even fathom what a 20 pound rainbow or larger would feel like on the line. Like the fisheries we generally go after them, we're lucky if we catch something around 3 pounds, 3 to 4 pounds. Yeah, and they are a handful to like keep on the line and just like one of the hardest fighting fish that you're gonna hook up on.
And yeah, we tell a lot of our clients not even to try and bring them in at the start. It'd be like hooking a Chinook, I guess, right? You don't really want to start cranking them in right away. You want to let them fight first and then bring them in, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what's next for Fishing Geeks here? What's on the horizon? You're amping up the guiding service?
Just pretty much guiding. You know, we're going to try and get more into guiding and get people into fish, I feel like. And just, yeah, doing the guiding thing, I guess, and seeing how that goes and if it pans out.
Yeah, this will be like a tough year to do it, but we've just been to Toronto.
But do you guys have that in Canada packages? Or like if someone wanted to come out from Manitoba or Saskatchewan, you'd have some talk to them?
Yeah, on our website we have all our rates and stuff and packages that are available.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your website then? Is it just fishinggeeks.com?
Fishinggeeks.net.
.net. Perfect. Yeah. So if anyone's looking to get onto that, fishinggeeks.net, and you can find them there. So
yeah, or just Google Fishing Geeks. It should pop up too.
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing I'd like to just reflect on here is through watching all your videos there, Sean, you and Adam, and you guys obviously put a lot of time, effort, and thought into fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that comes through loud and clear in every single video you guys do is that you guys just love fishing, and it's awesome to see. Just every time you guys hook up on a fish, it's exciting to
it's
see.
It's either nice and calm or just awesome chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, it takes a big fish for us to get excited most of the time, but the excitement is still there, and if that's gone, if you're like, oh, there's a 15-pound brown trout, whatever, it's like, well, it's just what we love doing, so we're glad that we get so excited when it happens. So it's our hobby, it's part of our life.
How excited were those guys that caught, what did you say, 5 over 15 or something like that?
They weren't hardcore fishermen. They were just people, clients. They were excited, absolutely. But it's like, okay, it's like I told my friend, we're going to go burbot fishing and we're going to catch as many 8-pound to 9-pound to 10-pound burbot as you want. You're going to get sick of it. He's like, no, I'm not. After 15 fish, what? He's like, okay, can we go catch walleye? I'm like, I told you, you'll get sick of it. So it's like anything, you get too much of something, then, you know, it's not as enjoyable. So it's kind of nice now that it's tougher to catch them. So when you do catch a big trout at Diefenbaker now, it's very exciting, right? So a lot of our clients, I don't know if you ever guided, a lot of them expect it, right?
Right.
So you get those clients, it's not as enjoyable. But then you get the other clients, it's like they just lose their minds, and that's what you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those people that lose their minds, that enjoy it just as well as you do, and that's why Adam and I started guiding, is to get people into stuff like the privileges we have too. So
yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to accomplish here a little bit too, maybe to a different degree, but I tell you what, if my baseline for trout fishing was 5 15-pound rainbows, I think fishing would be wrecked for me.
Well, I'd give it 2 or 3 years and make a trip with us for trophies, and they're bringing back the fishery now, so I feel like there's going to be a better fishery in 2 to 3 years here. They're going to be doing some more stalking, and we're told. So
on a percentage scale, your clients, are, do you find most of them are generally like the hardcore fishermen, or do you get a lot of people that just come out, don't know a whole bunch about fishing, but just want to catch a big ass fish?
I'd say it's half and half. Right now it might be a little more than half. A lot of people know more of us and what we're all about, but back in the day when people just saw us with a world record, we had a website, and they just wanted to catch a big one. That was their goal, just to catch a rainbow trout over 20 pounds. Once they did that, they were fine, right? So those are the people that they liked it, but it wasn't that exciting for them, right?
Interesting.
Just a check mark off their box. Hey, I want to get the 20-pound rainbow. Here, we'll go with these guys. Hey, they'll get that done. Yeah. 50-50 probably for that.
Have you ever shot an elk, Sean?
No, I tried this year pretty hard, actually. And my friend got one a week before me.
Oh.
But I just got my first elk tag this year, or last year, I guess it was. Was my first elk tag. You can get the bull elk, but I've actually never spent the time to go get a big bull elk.
Mm-hmm.
I had my first cow elk tag, and then obviously the year you see all the cow elks, you don't have a tag, and the year you don't see them, you got a tag.
Oh, man.
Typical.
Yeah, but I do a lot of whitetail deer hunting, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to see me scream like a little girl, it would be after I shot a big elk or
big
an elk,
to
any matter, so yeah.
Elk's like a giant brown trout.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever have the desire to get on the hot bullhead bite, we have all the spots, man.
Yeah, well, maybe one time we'll come for the channel cats. My brother went and did that on Aaron. Was Aaron's stag, I think? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd never actually had the chance to get down there and do that. So that would be something I'd like to do.
You haven't done cats?
Not the big channel cats. No.
Oh, man. I'd say that's Chase open door policy kind of scenario there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Man.
I feel like it's like a little bit like the burbot fishing, but during the day.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And they fight a lot harder.
Yeah, it's relaxing fishing until you get one on the line, obviously, but it's a lot of fun.
The interesting thing about catfishing and taking new people, like you're not a new person to fishing, Sean. So like, I'm not talking about you, but like if you take someone out catfishing, I find who hasn't really fished much, it's an accessible way to get into fishing. But at the other hand, when you hook one up, I find most people don't really believe you when they say, oh, just wait, it doesn't know it's hooked yet.
Yeah.
It'll start fighting in about, 4 minutes.
A couple of our clients found that out the hard way. My brother was like, hey, you got a trout on, loosen your drag, it doesn't know it's hooked. He's like, no, it doesn't feel that big. And I was like, no, the trout here are big. And then Adam's like, loosen your drag. He's like, oh, it's good. And then all of a sudden, snap.
Oh,
yeah. So we've had a couple of our clients do that, which it hurts, but it is what it is.
Lessons learned.
Yeah. So yeah, that catfish fishing would be great and be fun to do.
Well, Shelly, what do you think? Final finals?
Yeah, final. I don't know if you guys hear me. I'm having some technical difficulties here.
Yeah,
but
can hear your technical difficulties coming through.
Yeah, sorry guys. I was trying to like mute my mic as much as I could because it's just the way it is. But yeah, so I guess my final thought is you guys are doing lots of guiding and stuff, and just let us know how we can get a hold of you, like. For anybody, like whoever's listening, if they want to come out and check you guys out, like you said, you have Instagram and Facebook and stuff, but you got a website and what you guys are doing in the future, like going forward.
Yeah, so basically, Fishing Geeks, you could Google, and I think our website will pop right up too. But our website is fishinggeeks.net, and then we have all our guiding rates on there. And Instagram and Facebook, we have pages, and you could just check out our recent catches and catches from the past too. So
nice.
Yeah.
Sean, if you could fish anywhere not in Canada, where would it be, and what species are you going after?
Oh, I was talking about.
Did you talk to Jay about tarpon? Is that what you're?
No, I would love to do. Just do a tuna fishing trip somewhere. That would be fun. But then also in the States, I would like to catch a paddlefish.
Oh yeah, that'd be pretty cool, yeah. Too. Kind of one of those regional fish.
Well, it's just they're cool, and I know you got to have to snag them. Like it's a fish you have to snag because they don't actually eat anything. But I feel like they're just so cool looking. It's like a sturgeon, right? Everyone wants to catch a sturgeon, right?
They're pretty freaky looking. They're very unique, that's for sure.
And when I first heard about them, I was like, man, those are cool looking fish. So I feel like that, or I think tuna would be my first on my list. I've never tuna fished, so wherever. You could do that, I guess, in Canada, but down in the States or in Florida or whatever, too, maybe.
So if the guide said, turn down the drag on the tuna, would you listen to him?
I crank that right up. I think you'd need to on the tunas.
Yeah.
It'll spool you. But yeah, that'd be awesome to fight some big tuna. That'd be cool.
Well, I guess thanks for coming on, Sean. It's been a blast, man.
Thanks for hanging with us here as we kind of adapt to the new nature of reality here as we're all trying to figure our way out through the...
This is kind of our first full episode where we're pretty much all remote here, so it's a bit of a learning curve. We've done a few podcasts where the guest was over Skype, but this is the kind of first all branched out here. So
well, it is what it is. You got to live with what's going on in the world, and yeah, thanks for having me too, guys.
Hey man,
yeah, no problem. And another thing, I'm just gonna say thanks, Sean. Another thing is just like, we've had a lot of discussions with people throughout social media and stuff, but like talking to you right off the bat, and we asked if you want to be on the podcast, and you were totally down to do it. And it took a little while to get some scheduling issues figured out, but yeah, thanks again just for being open-minded and taking some time to be on the podcast. So thank you very much.
No problem, and it kind of was good timing, I guess, with everything happening too. So
yeah, for sure.
Good luck with all your future endeavors. Also, I'm sure you guys will have no issues becoming successful in the guiding world. But
well, thanks so much.
Hopefully, the COVID takes off away here soon.
I'm hoping 2 months or 3 months, and then this is going to be gone. So,
just in time for August trout season.
Yeah.
Well, and then hopefully in the meantime, you guys seal off those last two line categories for rainbows, and then you can kind of dust your hands of that.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, Sean, thanks so much, buddy.
All right, thank you.
Take care, man.
You too, bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening, folks. Thank you to Sean Conrad for coming on. Love what the Fishing Geeks are doing there. They put the hours in, grind. Clearly, that's what they're going to be bringing to the guiding service. Encourage you to check them out online. And also a big thank you to everyone who listens. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe, tell a friend, tell a buddy. That's how we keep this thing moving forward. That's how we get cool guests like Sean. That's how we get cool guests like Bob. Well, Bob might not have known us before, but he knows us now. Final, what do you guys think of the episode here? And what do you think got going forward here for Panoramic Outdoors? Shelly?
Yeah, it was a great episode. Just want to say the same thing as kind of Tristan just said. Hopefully everyone's staying safe. Pick up your Skeller Up boots if you ever see them on the market. Look them up. Go online. Find them. But yeah, stay safe, everyone. Take care. It kind of sucks that I can't be sitting around the table with Tristan and Chase, but we got to do what we got to do, and hopefully this is some sort of entertainment for everyone else.
Anyways, thanks again for listening, guys, and we will catch you on the next one.